I'm your host, Jenny Worthington, and I will be introducing you to people and organizations around the world who are working for animal welfare. We're being called to participate in making the world a better place, and the people I will be talking with are on the front lines of critical work that we need to know about so that we can support them. I hope you enjoy, and thanks for listening. Hello, everybody, and welcome in to Hello Animal Talks, your ticket to learning about people and organizations around the world who are working for animal welfare. And today, I'm very excited to have here from the Soy Dog Foundation, marketing team leader, Naomi, and she's going to tell us about the Soy Dog Foundation and what they're doing. They are located in Phuket, Thailand. And they are on a mission to help all the thousands of stray dogs and cats that are on the island. So welcome, Naomi.
Hi, Jenny. Very nice to finally talk to you. And thank you for giving us this opportunity to talk to you.
Absolutely. I think what you're doing over there is really amazing and really could be duplicated in other areas of the world that are facing the same situations. You know, you set a good example for people around the world to do the same kind of work. It's a big issue.
Yes. So the Soy Dog Foundation was, the initial idea behind it was just to help the street dogs and cats. And success is due to a lot of factors, because I think a lot of people want to help animals everywhere, but it's a lot of effort and a lot of planning that goes into it. And I think Soy Dog is a prime example of how a small organization just started with just ordinary people turning into something absolutely extraordinary.
Yes. Well, tell us how you got involved with them.
So I've been in Soy Dog for, I think now, almost 3.5 years. I actually came in I was part of the adoptions team for about 2 years, and then I moved on to the marketing team. So that's where I've been for the last year and a half. I've moved on from adoptions, where adoptions was getting to know the animals firsthand, working with adopters, trying to match adopters to, the adults, or, trying to find them a good fit for them. And marketing is less hands-on work, but we work a lot with every team. So we kind of have a good eye on everything that's going on, trying to keep an eye on everything that every team is going on. If it's worth sharing with the rest of, our supporters, our followers, then we're on it. That's kind of what our job entails.
That's an important job. So tell us how Soy Dog Foundation started.
Okay, so it was started by 3 expats, a Dutch lady called Margot and 2 British expats, John and Jill Daly. So Margot is not known so much because she was an integral part of the beginning of Soy Dog. She was here, I think, before John and Daly came to Phuket, and she was sterilizing animals. She was trying to get animals, injured animals, help. And John and Jill also joined forces, and initially was just trying to feed the stray dogs. And in Phuket in 2003, when we were officially founded, there's an estimate of about maybe 70,000 street dogs just on the island itself. And it's all rough estimates, but there were a lot of dogs and a lot of injured, sick dogs. And there were some of them were living in temples. Some of them were just roaming the streets. So it was just a way for people, expats like themselves, to come together and help the animals. But then they realized if they make it more of a legal organization, then there is a better opportunity and more scope to do things. And that's how it started. So Margot, however, left. She went back to the Netherlands a few years later. And then John and Jill obviously then took over. And that's kind of how it started. It was all just, it was just 3 average people coming to Thailand. They wanted to come and retire. They knew about the soy dog. So just to clarify, soy means street in Thai language, and that's why soy dog means street dogs. So you would see soy dogs everywhere, and they wanted to. It was, when you come from a Western country where you don't see such a, just random street animals walking around, it's so difficult not to do something, and that's what they did too. But they kind of took it the the extra mile and decided to do whatever it takes to help the animals. So that was kind of how the soy dog started.
Why is the problem so bad there? Because you said 70,000.
Yes.
Yeah, that's pretty overwhelming. And is there a lot of poverty there that people are not able to take care of their pets, so they abandon them on the streets and then they reproduce? Or do you know the origin of this issue?
So I think this is a common problem in lots of countries in the world, where developing countries in the world. So Thailand, Asia, obviously Africa, maybe South America, places like that. So it's difficult to identify, but the main reason I think is the fact that, you know, governments do not, their priority are not street animals. They have other problems going on in countries like this. So if you look at the Western world, you come to that position because you're in a better economic state. So I think the financials and the economy of countries has a major impact on the street animals and the welfare of animals. So it takes time. And also because spay and neuter is obviously the way forward. And that's the main program that Soy Dog runs. But in general, in most of these developing countries, running comprehensive spay and neuter programs, it just doesn't exist because governments do not have the money. And you talked about abandonment. That's one issue or one contribution to the stray dog population. So we have feral dogs. So the way I look at it is, in Western countries, you would see, like in the US, for instance, you would see a lot of feral stray cats. And you have to think of the same thing with dogs, where stray cats, you're still trying to control the population. There are feral cats who can never be rehomed. You have community cats who are happy where they are as long as there's someone to look after them. So it's the same problem, but we have that with dogs. Whereas in lots of countries in the US, Europe, that problem with the dogs have been managed because there is a bigger risk for humans with dogs running around, you know, with rabies and dog bites, whereas with cats, it's also difficult to control because they're smaller. But I think it's the same problem, but we have that with dogs, and we're in the process of finding solutions, but it's so massive, it just takes so long. So spay and neuter is the way forward, but it just takes so long. So 70,000 street animals in Phuket was 17 years ago, but with our spay and neuter program, we have been able to reduce it by at least 80-90% now. So if you come to Phuket, you don't actually see that many stray dogs. And the ones you see are actually pretty healthy because they've all been sterilized, and we are on top of, we're managing the situation. And there are people who look after the dogs, so they get fed, so there's less diseases. But even then, you know, we get so many still animals who are coming in who are injured. So you still see that, so it's a long process. And in Thailand, overall, we think the estimate is a rough estimate, but we think there could be at least 10 million stray dogs. So these are free-roaming dogs who are partly feral, partly community dogs, and dogs who owned as well, but they come into the population because people don't always keep the dogs inside in their homes. They let them run loose. That's just the way it is. So there are very various contributions to the problem.
It's really amazing that they took on such a daunting task, and they started out really just going out and feeding them, right? And then they realized that it was not going to get any better unless the reproductive process was interrupted. And then they started with the spaying and the neutering.
Yes. So John and Jill had been to Phuket before they decided to retire here. And I think they met a street dog that I think kind of was the catalyst for Soy Dog years before. And when they knew that one day they were going to come back and they were going to try and they were going to retire here and also do something for the soy dogs. And yes, spay and neuter, you know, feeding, you have to feed them because there's just so much suffering and there's so many dogs who don't have food, at least back in the days in Phuket. And alongside that, they did, you know, they did sterilization. So they had the vet was an American vet who was here. I'm not 100% sure where he or she was from, but a vet was here volunteering to sterilize dogs and cats, and they kind of work with them. And over time, we had obviously a lot of, lot of things have happened. The tsunami came just before that. Jill lost her legs because they were darting a dog to be sterilized, and she ran into a buffalo, like a swamp, and then her legs caught a germ. And that's a whole different story, but so many things happened. But all along that, they wanted to, the spay and neuter has always been the primary focus of Soy Dog. And alongside that, we built other programs because there are so many issues that come with such a massive population crisis of dogs, stray dogs.
Right. And so you're not only doing the spaying, the neutering, but also taking care of whatever wounds and diseases they come in with. Is that right?
Yes. So with so many large population of animals, you can't bring them in. And that's a frequent question that people ask us, because if they see, they're like, oh, why aren't you taking this dog in? Why aren't you helping this dog? This dog is on the road. When you have that many number of animals, we might need an island that's bigger than Phuket to hold all the dogs in Thailand. It's not feasible. It's not good for their welfare. So the only animals we take in are vulnerable and injured animals. And if they have a feeder, or if the area is safe, or if someone comes forward to say, I know this dog, I can look after this dog, then we release them back to where they were found. However, there are always going to be animals who are run over by vehicles, so we have to amputate their legs, maybe some of them lose eyes, some of them, there could have been cruelty involved. So we kind of investigate each case, and then we decide, our vets and our animal welfare team decides whether the animals should go back or not. So yes, so we still get in a lot of animals. So on a daily basis, obviously this year the numbers have increased due to COVID, but on an average, maybe 20 animals come in a day for treatment. And that's every single day. It could be 15 or 20 animals. Some of them could be kittens who are abandoned, or kittens who've lost their mums, dogs who've been met by accidents. And they come in for treatment. And then at the end of their treatment period, we will decide, are these animals going to stay with us? Can they be adopted out? Or is it better for them to live in their familiar territory where they're getting fed, where they're happier, rather than being in a shelter environment with lots of other animals, which creates lots of problems in the future. So we always try and think of what's best for them and then make that decision. So treatment and rescue is another important aspect of what we do.
And are people bringing these animals to you, or do you get phone calls that somebody's seen an animal is hurt, or somebody knows of an animal that's in a bad situation and you go out and find it?
It's a mix of both. So we have animal rescue sort of teams who are out and about in Phuket, and where we get calls, we get lots of messages from people as well. They know about us, so they find an injured animal and they Google us and they find us and they message us. We also have a network of feeders. So these are all locals who look after the animals in their community, and they will obviously feed the animals, so they know the animals, or they will see an animal. They're in the neighborhood out with the animals. So they will give us a call, or they will message us and say, look, I've seen this dog. It doesn't look well. Can you come and have a look? So yeah, it's a mix of both. And we also have a community outreach project. So this is a team of vets and assistants who go out in Phuket. We also try and treat these animals in their community rather than bringing them in. So they recover much faster. It depends on the injury. And if we have feeders, we give them the medication. So last year, the community outreach program treated almost as many number of animals as the ones who came into the shelter. So that was, I think, about 4,000 animals that we treated last year just outside of the shelter within the island of Phuket.
Wow, that's a lot. And how do you find these feeders? Are they just people in the neighborhood that volunteer, or they were doing it before you all got involved?
I think, again, it's a mix of both. It's a Buddhist country, so people do tend to look after animals in different, different people have different ways of looking at it. It doesn't matter what your religion or where you come from. Some people are naturally drawn to help animals, some people aren't. So some of these feeders have been feeding them for a while. We've known them for years. Sometimes people move in and they see animals, so they naturally start feeding. And over time, they've come into our feeder network, but some of them, so sometimes we provide them with food as well. So that's another way that our donors' money goes into not just helping the animals within the shelter, but we also help to feed some of the animals as well through the feeders. Some of them do it on their own. So it's again a mix. It's a mixed bag of how and where these people come from.
And are you all doing any kind of education work for the population on animal cruelty and neglect and all that kind of thing? Is that a part of what you do?
Yes. So we have an education, human education program. We actually, that's been going on for a few years. That's primarily targeting school children, the local schools, because as we all know, it starts when you're young. So it's really important to change your mindset. And what we really want to focus on is for little kids to know that street animals, even though they live on the street, are just as important as your pets. And even if you have pets, it's not just having a pet just because it's cute and cuddly or it's a puppy. It's a lifelong commitment. So we have a human education team. We have two staff members who liaise with local schools who go out and do talks to the kids and help them do activities. They also come into the shelter sometimes and they have a look around. We also recently opened up our human education office. So it's one of a kind in Thailand. It's based in our shelter. And it was obviously, all of it's been funded by our donors. And they come here and they will learn activities and they will learn more about the five freedoms. That's really important for animals. Just to start them on the right track. So we have that program ongoing for young kids, and for adults, it's a little bit more difficult. So it's an ongoing thing of, you know, you kind of go there and show what people do, and it's a learning process as we do it sort of thing. So yeah, we do have sometimes first aid and sort of workshops for feeders. We did one of them in Samui Island, where we're going to go next year to do a sterilization program. There are lots of groups within the island, a smaller island in Thailand. And there are lots of groups doing a lot of work, but they need to come together to work. So we're just giving them the support to do that and kind of sharing our experiences over the years of how best to do it and how you can work together, because everyone's on the same path, but sometimes you just need some bit of a push to coordinate between themselves.
And what are the five freedoms? I haven't heard of that.
Now, I might need to look this up myself, but and the five freedoms are, it's a universal freedoms that's been defined. And I think it started, I can't remember, years ago, I think in the UK, and it started for farm animals. So it's about, you know, giving them enough space for them to move around, giving them the freedom to display normal behavior. So it's kind of understanding that you can't just have an animal and treat it like a teddy bear, for instance. It's understanding that they have needs. They need food and water. They need veterinary care. They have their own personalities and behavior. So giving them that freedom to display those things. So it's kind of refraining people from chaining up animals, beating animals, making sure that they get fed and a nutritious meal, not just scraps. And giving them veterinary care, that's really important, because sometimes people think, oh, they're animals, we just need to give them food and water and they're fine. But no, you need to vaccinate them on time, you need to sterilize them. And then going a little bit beyond that is, again, understanding they have behaviors, like enrichment is important for dogs and for cats, and understanding things like that. So you can look it up. I can't remember them individually, but that kind of sums it up. And I think now it's moved on to even more. Those are just the five basic freedoms for any living animal.
It sounds like that's something we need to get a refresher course on here in the United States, because the factory farming situation does not follow those freedoms at all. Yeah, I think we could do a refresher course on that.
There's a lot to learn everywhere for all of us.
Yeah, there really is. You know, you can think about all the wild animals and the issues they have, but the domestic animals that we're supposed to be taking care of, you know, are close to home and we need to be helping them as well. Okay, so tell us about, I know that you had the tsunami, what, in 2005?
Yes, it was 2004, Boxing Day.
So that was a very big thing for you all.
Yes. So obviously I wasn't here at the time, but I think that's kind of what helped Soy Dog in a way to be what it is today, because before that it was a few volunteers, John and Jill, working together. And when the tsunami happened, so I mentioned before about Jill, so she obviously had this sort of unfortunate incident that happened just a few months before the tsunami. Basically, they were trying to catch a dog, and some of these dogs are feral, so you have to dart them, and the dog just ran into a swampy area. So Jill, being Jill, just ran after the dog because the dog was going to be unconscious very soon. So she ran after the dog to get the dog, and then she got the dog. But then I think the day before, her legs were feeling quite funny and they were going blue. So she was rushed to the hospital, and they found out that a bug had basically got into her bloodstream, and her legs were pretty much dying. And I think she went into a coma right after that. And they had to amputate her legs. They didn't think they could save the arms, but they were able to save her arms, and they had to amputate the legs, I think, from knee down. So then, and then just a few, I think just around the same time, the tsunami happened. She lost her best friend during the tsunami. And obviously a lot of people were displaced. A lot of people passed away. And so were the animals as well. There were animals who were displaced. So Jill obviously came home, had come home, I think, around the same time, and she offered to help. I think John went out to help the people who were stranded or trying to help with the rescues. And it was a bunch of things. They tried to help the people as well as the animals at the same time. But during that time, we had international aid come into Thailand, and they were looking for an organization working with animals to carry out spay and neuter programs. And obviously then Soy Dog was on their radar because of the work we were doing already, and you know, and that's kind of how it started. So it supported us to carry on with our spay and neuter program and eventually grow to what it is today. So with that tragedy, in a way, it kind of opened the doors to do something bigger.
That's a hard way to get your name on the map.
It's probably not the way I would have wanted to, but yes, I think it's just learning from things. And since then, you know, disaster management here, I mean, we're not, for instance, I know in the U.S. you have a lot of hurricanes and, you know, a lot of natural disasters. So in Thailand, we mostly see floods, which are quite common, not so much in Phuket, but maybe in the north and other areas. So we have been called several times over the years to help. I think in Bangkok, we had a major flooding. I think, I can't really recall the year, but somewhere maybe early 2000s, maybe. And, you know, and a lot of animals were stranded. And last year, we had a call from Ubon province where animals were stranded. So we, you know, we kind of, all those things help you to learn more about what you need to do, and how to help with liaise with government agencies to help the animals. And we're very lucky to be able to do that. Although we're based in Phuket and our shelter is only in Phuket, but we are able to help in certain situations like that where there are natural disasters or big crises happening with animals. We're in a position now to help, which I think is, we're very lucky. And so apart from helping the animals in Phuket, we are also able to help. We have been called upon to help in certain crises in other parts of Thailand. So with things like natural disasters. So we had flooding last year in the Ubon province, which is further north from us. And we've also had a situation in another northern part of Thailand where there was a rabies scare. This was a few years ago, where I think a couple of dogs were known to have rabies. So the community and the local government didn't know how to react to it or how to control it. So what they did was they just decided to collect all the dogs and have a makeshift shelter. And we had thousands of dogs being put in a pile, you know, into the shelter, which was not properly managed. It wasn't meant to be a shelter. And sadly, dogs who had rabies and who didn't have rabies were all putting together. There were pets, all of them. So it was a horrific thing to have happened. And by the time we were alerted to it, you know, a lot of animals had already died. But then we managed to work with the local government, the local vets, and we vaccinated a lot of the dogs, and we're able to quarantine them. And eventually we brought a whole lot of them down to Soy Dog in Phuket, and we found homes for them all over the world. So responding to natural disasters and crises like that is also part of what we do. And it's all again, I want to take this opportunity to thank all our donors and our supporters, because we've come a long way from the time when John and Jill and Margot were together and just helping. You know, they used to do spay and neutering in backyards, in their living rooms. That's how it began. But now we've come to this position where we're not just helping the dogs in Phuket. We're able to help in a very unique way to animals all over Thailand and also beyond as well, because we're obviously trying to work to cut down to stop the dog meat trade in other countries like Vietnam and Cambodia as well.
China's big in that as well, aren't they?
Yes, they are. So we get a lot of questions asking people, oh, can you help? You know, there are lots of issues going on, but sadly we do not have the resources to go that far. And we are trying to focus more closer to home, which is Vietnam. And so this would be a good opportunity to also talk a little bit about the dog meat trade, because a lot of people know Soy Dog for the dog meat trade and how we were helping with that situation. So now the dog meat trade is illegal in Thailand. It was abolished in 2014 time, and now we have the first ever Animal Welfare Act came into play in 2014. So it's pretty much controlled, if non-existent in Thailand. But the animals who were taken from Thailand used to go to Vietnam. They were smuggled through the borders in Vietnam, which is actually the second largest consumer of dog meat, behind China. And what we're trying to do now is there are no laws there, so you can't just go in and rescue the animals and hope for the best. You have to cut it at the root. And our policy is to be proactive in trying to work with the government agencies and the government there and to try and bring in laws that will stop it altogether, and then you can think about rescuing them, doing spay and neutering, and kind of replicating what's happened in Thailand. So China is not somewhere that we can go to. It's just not possible, the country, the way it's run, all those things. But so we're working with organizations in Cambodia there, where we're working with them to create awareness. We have in Vietnam as well. It's creating awareness to showing people that this is not the way forward, because majority of people in Vietnam do not consume dog meat. They all have their pets, and it's their pets that sometimes who are captured for the dog meat trade. So a lot of people don't want it. So that's another thing I would like to emphasize, because sometimes when people follow us or they hear about us, people think that all of Asia, all of Vietnamese people, for instance, are into dog meat, and they're all set in this sort of middle-aged ways, but it's quite the contrary. It's just a part of what happens there. And it's not really the culture. It's partly the culture, but also it's something that's just part of some people. Some people are doing it, but not everybody. And sometimes it's a bit of a luxury for people. So it's not because there is no other means for food. It's just something that's been going on. And it's just tackling that problem as it is, but it doesn't affect their culture. It's a very complicated issue, so which I don't think we really have time to get into, but that just kind of touches on what the dog meat trade is like in Southeast Asia.
Well, I think it's really important what you said for us to know that it's not a general population issue, that they're not all doing it. I think that's really important for us to know, because it does.
Definitely.
It appears that way just through the bits and pieces that you hear. You get the impression that it's
everyone.
So I did read that you have a very beautiful veterinary facility that is almost like going to a state-of-the-art hospital, which is really fantastic. That's a huge accomplishment in itself.
Yes. So this was Jill's dream before she, before her untimely passing in 2017. And I can't remember when exactly the hospital was, the construction started, but it was opened in 2016, 2017. So it's the first of its kind in Asia. And it's a hospital dedicated to stray dogs. So we have We would like to have more equipment there, but I think yes, for where we are, it's really good. It's quite we've got an X-ray machine, we have an ultrasound scanner, we have a dental unit, and we do all our bloods and blood checks and everything in house. Every day is crazy if you ask any of our vets, but we kind of have a routine of how things are done. So when animals come in, we have a system where we record all their details, and then we also go into the animals would come in, and then we would check them into for hospital. Where they need to go, whether they need surgery, and then we have our kennels where they will live for a little while until the treatment is done, and then we have a veterinary team, animals who will stay with us and who will be our resident animals. So we have with a different team of vets who are going to be looking after this resident animal. So those are animals who will stay with us. Some of them will be up for adoption. And so that's the bit about the dog hospital. We also opened our dedicated feline hospitals last year. And that is dedicated to the cats. So the cats used to be, we had a cattery that was kind of divided into the cat hospital and the resident cats. It was a very small building at the time because we didn't have that many cats. And over time, the number of cats have grown as well. So we needed to make sure the hospital was away from the main cattery. So we expanded our shelter, and that one of the important buildings in the project was the cattery. So the cattery is the same. We have bigger kennels, like cat cages for them, but they have a lot more space. They have more levels, depending on how long they're staying. In there as well, we have a surgery unit and an isolation unit. And also with cats, they have cat flu and parvo and all that as well. So we've just opened up a new isolation unit because we had a very, very small isolation unit and it wasn't that great. So for parvo, for cats and dogs and canine distemper, which we see every now and then. So we have new facilities for the animals just so that we can give them the best of what we can while they're going through some of their worst times.
Now, so are you located all in one general area, or is your facility spread out around Phuket?
So we're all in one area. So our shelter is in Phuket. We're in the north of Phuket. It's an area called Mai Khao, just near the airport. And then we move out. Like we have our teams who might go out, like our community outreach team, who would spread out to other parts of Phuket to bring animals in or to treat them. But yes, the entire shelter, all the facilities I talked about, the office, we're all based in one location.
How many dogs do you currently have?
So the population varies. This year we hit the highest number ever of animals we had at one time. So these include animals who are staying with us, animals who are currently receiving treatment at the shelter. And we had at one point 1,300 animals. So that's the highest we've had because of COVID, actually, because we had a lot of animals that we wouldn't normally come in, like animals who were abandoned, came into us. So we're actually looking after about 300 plus animals, more than we would normally do this time of the year.
And where do you get the people that work for you? Are they local? Do they come from all over the world? Are they volunteers?
So for general day-to-day jobs, we have staff. And it's because it's just so much going on. It's difficult to rely on volunteers. Mm-hmm. So majority of the staff are Thai. Thai locals. We have the vets are all Thai, and the carers. We also have Burmese staff as well, because there are a lot of Burmese people working in Thailand. So majority of the staff are Thai and Burmese. We also have foreigners who work with us, and this is to do with, these are roles that come with experience or things like with the fundraising team, the marketing team, for instance. But it's a mix in our office as well. We have a local adoption team, so they're all local Thai people. We have a few foreigners working in the adoption team as well, the ones who do the international adoptions. So it's a mix of people, but majority local people.
So I actually was looking on your adoption site. It's incredible, the stories of the dogs, and very tempted myself. Right at the moment, we have two dogs ourselves, and my husband would not be happy So not at the moment, but you all would definitely be at the top of my list if I was looking for a dog. And I would really encourage people that are looking to look at your site. And I think adoption is just such a great choice to make.
Yeah. So adopting obviously is one of the big ways that anyone can help, because when you decide to adopt an animal, that means you free up a space in our shelter to have another animal come in. And so the adoption process, we obviously always try and adopt animals locally first. So priority is always given locally. But unfortunately, as dogs get older, there is less demand, and these are the animals that end up going overseas. So these are all street animals who most of them haven't lived in a home before. They're just, you know, used to wander the streets and got ill, got hit by cars, so things like that. And they come in, we look after them, like I explained before, and then they go out for adoption. So the adoption, so overseas adoptions, US and Canada and UK and other parts of Europe are the most common destinations for our adopted animals. So US definitely is also one of the easiest places to get animals to. And obviously, you know, most of the people who adopt from us already have their own animals. They have their rescue animals. They're just reaching out to help another animal in need from Thailand.
That was my plan. I don't want to keep you all night or all night. It's all night here.
Okay.
I know you're busy. So I'm going to let you go. But is there anything we haven't covered that you feel like would be important for people to know?
I think one of the things, I know we briefly touched on spay and neutering, but I think it's worth mentioning now that Soy Dog is actually sterilizing more animals probably than any other organization in the world. We are close to, we're actually might be hitting 500,000 sterilizations this month. So we're so excited for that, and we're looking forward to making a big announcement for that. Hopefully by the time you actually have the recording go out, it might be, we probably would have announced that. And so that's something we're really, really excited about. And every month we sterilize about, it's coming out to an average of about 12,000 animals. And I know we said that we're primarily based in Phuket, but we have a massive sterilization program happening in Bangkok, where we believe where the most number of, you know, animal stray dogs are. And and again, it's all thanks to our donors. We're also supported by the Dogs Trust Worldwide, which is a UK charity, one of the big charities there. We're supporting us as well. And so spaying and neutering, I just can't emphasize, because I feel a lot of our supporters knew us through the dog meat trade and how we help the animals. And spaying and neutering is not something that's exciting when you talk about, especially if you're another country, why would you be interested in spaying and neutering in Thailand? But with the sheer number of animals that you see, it is, like we said, the way forward, and it's really, really important. And all the rescue cases and the animals that you see with, you know, these horrific injuries, the only hope for us not to see them is to decrease the population. So if anyone is interested in finding out more about Soy Dog and about the work we do, please go to our website. It's got everything covered there, from the dog meat trade to spaying and neutering. All of that is there. And of course, we're also on social media. We're very active on social media, so you can find out everything you need to know about us. And I know people also ask, how do you help? So obviously donating is one way. You can also do your own fundraisers. And we're registered in the US, so you're actually also eligible for tax deductions if you do donate to Soy Dog, even though we're in Phuket. We're in Thailand because we're registered also in the US. But the money comes for the animals here. So you can do your own fundraisers. We also have a merch shop if anyone is interested during this holiday season and buying anything for friends and family. So you can do all that as well. But everything is online, so I don't want to go into detail, but yes, and of course you can get in touch with us as well anytime. You can email us or message us, and we'll be more than happy to answer any questions anyone might have.
That's great. And I will post all of that information at the end of the video. And so that will be available for everybody. Naomi, I so appreciate you taking this time, and I've really enjoyed talking to you.
Thank you so much, Jenny. It's been a pleasure talking to you as well. And again, thank you so much for giving us this opportunity so that more people can find out about how they can help.
Yes, I'm really excited about it. I think you all have an amazing model, and it's really exciting to hear about the work that you're doing, which is so important.
All right. Thank you very much. Have a good night.
You too. Have a good day.
Thank you for listening to Hello Animal Talks, hosted by me, Jenny Worthington, production by Stacy Spencer of Going Graphic, sound engineered by Jimmy Richards of Bay Central Media, and music written and performed by Jake Shepard.